Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation on the web at www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I can feel you like an ocean that won't seem to let me go.
Blessings to all. Welcome to Signs of Life, brought to you by Forever Family Foundation with our host, Bob Ginsberg. I'm Fran Ginsberg, and our show tonight is sponsored by Reiki Touch by Lauren, and she can be reached at 954-464-0087. Our guest tonight is Dr. Alan Botkin, and if you have a question, comment, or would like to talk to our guest, the toll-free number here is 888-627-6008. So, Bob, what's new today?
I'm cold.
It's winter.
Well, it's almost spring, and it's not fair. You know, there's a, getting another blast of winter air, and just when I thought it was over. You know, I was thinking about that today. When I was a kid, when I was watching the news, as I'm sure you would remember, I mean, there was one tiny little segment about the weather. And when you turn on the news today, and it seems like all the news stations, the weather person comes on three times.
Like, teasing the weather.
Teasing the weather.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, come on, I can look out my window, I could tell, you know. And today in this age we have, you know, the iPhones, and you have you can get information on the weather instantly, you know, by a touch of a button.
So
why do you need three, you know, weather segments?
You want to get me started on this?
Well, this has
nothing to do with the weather. This has more to do with them not reporting news.
Well, the news stories are, we were counting the other night, I think it was the first eight stories on the news were murders and rapes.
Right. Another reason why you're not getting news. When you used to turn on the news, you had journalists that were reporting things that were going on all over the world and giving you all the kinds of information.
You're right. News used to be news.
And now journalists don't exist.
It's all ratings. It's all about ratings. So.
No, I think it's more about the government not wanting you to have any information. But that's a discussion for another radio show.
Yeah, I've got to change the topic quick. We do have our grief retreat coming up. And, you know, one of the presenters at the grief retreat, Dr. Parisetti, he'll also be doing a very large venue at a local university the following week. And what interested me in Dr. Parisetti was that he's a medical doctor and a bereavement counselor, and his theory is much in line with the work of the foundation, and that presenting evidence is helpful, you know, to people that are grieving the loss of a loved one. So when you learn about, you know, the evidence from various phenomena, it gives you hope. So the question is, I know a lot of times we'll say, well, the only thing that can make you truly know that there's an afterlife is from personal experience. But don't you think that learning about all the evidence sets the stage for that? You know, if the stage isn't set and you're not open to it, you're never going to have that personal experience.
I agree, and I think that's more also in line with the concept of creating your own reality, and people who even have near-death experiences cross over and come back and have this quote-unquote hellish experience because that's what they've been taught. So if we're going to teach people that there is an all-loving universe, it's all about love and compassion, and that when you do cross over, these are the circumstances by which you continue your life, then people are open to that. And so once you're open to that, you can receive whatever the other side has for you. If it's just a simple communication, some words, some spirits even come through with a full physical embodiment to greet and let their loved ones that are still in the physical know that they're okay.
Yeah. Well, I from my own personal experience of, 15 years ago, who knows how many experiences I might have had, because if any came my way, I would certainly dismiss them, because that was the furthest thing from my mind. I didn't see any way possible, that your consciousness could survive your bodily death. So learning about these various things, when you learn about near-death experiences and deathbed visions and electronic voice phenomena and reincarnation and after-death communication and all these things, and you put it all together, then when that experience comes, when you get that communication, a little light bulb goes off and, here's my proof, my personal proof.
Okay, and let's go back, because you mentioned, the experiences that you may have had that you because you were not open for them, they didn't happen. Maybe they did happen. You don't remember them. Maybe they came at the most vulnerable time, which is during your sleep, and you got up and you expressed it to your parents. And what was the typical response parents would give? Oh, it's just a dream. Go back to sleep, where it may have very well have been an experience. So we have a new generation of people, of parents, that are more open to this kind of stuff. And so that when children do have these experiences, they're nurtured through it rather than dismissed.
Yeah, sometimes, there's always two sides to everything. I mean, it's wonderful that this new awareness is out there about, the evidence, and people are more exposed to things about mediums and so forth. But with this popularity comes exploitation, and that's something that we're very cognizant of, and that no matter how you cut it, the bereaved are being exploited in many, many times by many different so-called practitioners. And it's a shame, but I understand it, because that's the society in which we live.
Capitalistic, open-market society. It's unfortunate, but it's true. And when you are deep into that grief and you're in that caught up in that bereavement cycle, you don't have that toolbox of judgment that can help you through this and help you decipher and pick out what the safe places are to go and not to go. So it's not a good situation. And
I've been paying a lot of attention to it of late. I am putting together writing a book right now, and a lot of it has to do with this new cottage industry, of people that call themselves mediums and they're not. And one of the things that I put in the book was it's always interesting when you ask, let's say somebody goes for a medium reading, and then you ask the medium after the reading how the medium thought that they did in terms of evidence. And I just had one recently where the medium said, well, I know that I was 90% accurate. And then when I went over the scoring with the sitter, the sitter said that the medium was 10% accurate. I mean, 90% wrong.
Right.
So where the perception, why such a diametrically opposed, opinions on both sides?
The opinion from the sitter has a lot more weight coming from a physical experience in a physical world. The medium, from the medium's perspective, is that I got this information, therefore it must be good.
Right.
And so I'm 90% accurate. Well, not for this sitter, you're not. They're basing it on the fact, well, the sitter must not understand what I'm giving them because spirit gave me the information.
Right.
But what a lot of these underdeveloped mediums don't understand and don't take the time to learn or go to any of these schools, legitimate schools, or find a legitimate mentor, is that everybody gets loads of information from the unseen world. It's what we do with it, how we interpret it, and whether we share it with somebody else or not, or whether it's just for us. And if you don't understand that, and you're just out there trying to exploit people again and make money, then, yeah, you're 90%, but you're still only 10% to the sitter. So now we're going to take our break, and when we come back, we're going to hear more about the unseen world from our guest, Dr. Alan Botkin. So stay tuned.
Hello, my name is Lauren Halpern, and I'm a Reiki master. I enjoy bringing peace and inspiration to people. I conduct healing circles with inspiration, meditation, and Reiki at different community developments, religious institutions, and many other locations. People react so wonderfully to my events. For more information, please contact me, Reiki Touch by Lauren at 954-464-0087. That's 954-464-0087, or email me at laurenhalpern@gmail.com. laurenhalpern@gmail.com.
Starseed Gems Studios in Cocoa, Florida fuses cremation ashes within art glass, making beautiful stones. The ashes are visible in the darkness and resemble a beautiful night sky. Starseed Gems, developed by the parents of a young man who passed away, are set in hand-sculpted silver and gold settings. Prices start at $150. Visit www.starseedgems.com or call 321-632-7770. That's www.starseedgems.com or 321-632-7770.
Hello, my name's Piero Calvi Parisetti, MD. I invite you to discover my video course on Evidence for Life After Life, a professional counseling resource for the bereaved and the dying.
Transform the fear of death. Heal the pain of a loss by learning about life after life.
For more information and a free preview, visit www.drparisetti.com. That's drparisetti in one word, .com.
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide a forum where individuals and families who have suffered the loss of a loved one can turn for support, information, and hope. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. The Forever Family Foundation is a joint effort of scientists, research mediums, and interested people who support the premise that life does not end with physical death. We wish to prove that the bond of the family cannot be broken even by death. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707. That's 631-425-7707. Or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
Tuning in, our guest tonight is Dr. Alan Botkin. Our sponsor is Reiki Touch by Lauren, and she could be reached at 954-464-0087. Bob?
And it's our pleasure to welcome back Dr. Alan Botkin. He hasn't been with us in quite a while, and I should add before I start that we should all be wishing Alan some hearty congratulations as he became a grandparent for the first time today. So, best of luck to the Bakken family. Alan Bakken received his doctorate in psychology from Baylor University in 1983. He worked for 20 years in private practice as a staff psychologist for the Department of Veteran Affairs. His specialty was and is in diagnosing and treating post-traumatic stress disorders. He's treated a huge number of combat veterans. He's published scientific papers in the areas of brain functioning, post-traumatic stress disorder, and EMDR, which we'll talk about in a little while. His book is Induced After-Death Communication, and it details a procedure that he discovered that connects patients to deceased loved ones. His website is inducedadc.com. And when you're on that website, there's also a link to another website where you could see some videos, which is afterthewar.org. Welcome, Alan, and congratulations.
Well, thank you much, Bob, and thanks for having me, Bob and Fran. Yeah, it's been a long and kind of hectic day for me. It's been a very exciting day. But at the same time, I have enough energy. I had enough energy left over to look forward to this show.
Well, but we appreciate that very much. You know, so it's been a while, as I mentioned, so I guess a good place to start would be your work before you developed IADC. I mean, you began your career by treating patients, I assume, with traditional grief therapies?
I began my career after getting my doctorate in 1983 or so, and I worked in on an inpatient PTSD unit at the VA from then until 2003, and then I early retired and went into private practice. But while at the VA, I treated combat veterans on an inpatient unit with who had very severe PTSD and very severe losses as well.
So I know from reading the book then that at a certain point EMDR just came out, eye movement desensitization and reprocessing. Tell me about EMDR and how that works.
Okay. Well, we were using traditional therapies prior to EMDR, which came out in the early 90s, and we were one of the first units to begin using EMDR on a regular basis. But prior to that, using the main treatments that were available, our work was very grueling, not only for our patients, but it was kind of a burnout position for staff as well. But the treatment at the time was to get patients to talk about their traumatic memories in a safe, supportive, and non-judgmental environment. And the idea is that if you have them talk about it over and over again, the negative emotional charge eventually fades away. At least theoretically, that was the idea. But when EMDR came out, it absolutely changed everything. We found out that in a single session of EMDR, we could do what we were unable to do in 10 years of more standard therapy. And the technique involves having the patient track with his or her eyes back and forth, like a waving finger, a moving hand, in other words, while at the same time attending to a certain aspect of their traumatic memory, like an image or a feeling of sadness or fear. And the amazing part of that is after doing that for 10 or 15 seconds, patients report generally a dramatic shift in the emotional charge related to what they were paying attention to. It just sort of starts to move away. And it does that on a very regular and consistent basis across all patients that we were working with. And although it didn't make sense and we made fun of it when it first came out, you know, we thought that we knew everything about PTSD and the idea that you could wave a hand in front of somebody's face and they got better seemed kind of crazy to us. But we were at least open-minded enough to give it a try. And the very first time we tried it, the change in our patient was dramatic. The reason this works, and we have to go into more of the neuroscience of it. The reason this works probably has to do with dream sleep. When we are asleep and dreaming, our brains are actually processing and integrating information more rapidly and efficiently than when we're awake. And this increased processing during dreaming causes our eyes to dart back and forth, which is why dream sleep is called rapid eye movement or REM sleep. Well, the discovery of EMDR, which was not mine, it was made by Dr. Francine Shapiro in the late 1980s, her discovery seemed to suggest that you could take a fully awake person, and if you can get that person to move his or her eyes back and forth while attending to their trauma, we could actually put the brain into that higher processing mode while people were wide awake. So that mechanism that occurred normally only during dream sleep, we could use in wide awake people, and those traumatic memories just processed real rapidly. Mm. And probably the easiest way to explain it is when people have a traumatic memory, they not only remember what happened, they also relive emotionally what happened. Even though a trauma may have occurred 30 years in the past, when they remember it, it feels like to them it's happening all over again. Well, the amazing thing about this EMDR was it took that reliving component completely out of the memory. And people would say things like, you know, Doc, this is strange, but when I think about it now, I feel like it happened a long time ago, and it's over. Absolutely amazing. And
yeah.
You know, I and my colleagues were absolutely convinced this was the breakthrough of the century in terms of treating trauma.
Yeah. So that, and I can certainly understand your reaction when first introduced. I mean, here you are, you're treating patients successfully, and how could these eye movements change somebody's thought, memories, and grief, and then you see the real results of it. So what you were just describing, that's what people describe as like being in a loop, you know, let's say in an accident.
Right.
So it just keeps playing over and over and over again.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And
that's a good way of putting it, yeah.
Yeah. So now you're treating patients with EMDR. You're seeing some pretty good results or excellent results on a consistent basis. So,
mm-hmm.
And then that leads to this discovery, which you admit
right.
is a came about by accident, and you had to backtrack and try to figure out how it happened. So tell us the next stage.
Yeah. Well, this all happened in 1995 when I was at the VA. And I had my own program where I was treating combat vets, a group of five guys, all day long. And all we did was trauma work all day. So it was a great place to really use these tools to really try to help people. And there were a few things about the standard EMDR method that kind of troubled me, and I thought they were maybe not such good ideas, and so, you know, I began to experiment with the EMDR method, and a lot of my ideas didn't work, but I hit on about five or six that appeared to make the EMDR work even better. And so after I began making those changes and using them on my patients, something really strange happened, which I didn't understand at the time, which was at the end of the session, my patients generally believed that they had a spiritual contact with the deceased person they were grieving. And these people came to them surrounded by light and full of forgiveness and love, and my patients were not only experiencing a great amount of relief just from the eye movement part of it, they left my office feeling joy and happiness. And the first time this happened, I didn't know what it was. I thought my patient had hallucinated, and I was worried about that person. I thought maybe he had psychologically decompensated. But as it turned out, the first guy who had this experience not only maintained that very good feeling through the night and the next day, he maintained it over like the next 8 months when we knew him. I mean, it just kept going. It was one of the most amazing things I'd ever seen. And at first, I didn't know what it was. And I only started, to me, these experiences sounded like near-death experiences. sometimes they went through a tunnel before meeting the deceased. They found the deceased in these beautiful, rich landscapes that where you know trees and bushes and flowers seemed to you know radiate their own inner light. And people would say, you know, it's very much like Earth, but it's much more beautiful than Earth, but it's Earth-like. And but anyway, so, you know, I thought, you know, I had read Raymond Moody's book on Life After Life, you know, many years prior to that. And I thought, you know, there's a great similarity here. But then I found and read Bill and Judy Guggenheim's book, Hello from Heaven. And they did a survey of many thousands of people who reported these spontaneous after-death communications. And I was absolutely shocked. It was an oh my God moment for me when I read all of these reports, and they were the exact same thing, essentially, that my patients were reporting. Mm. So now I had a name for what my patients were experiencing, and they were called after-death communications. So.
So then you had to figure out whether this is something that you could reproduce in your technique, right? So how do you go about that?
Well, it happened after it happened that first time. It happened again with some of my other patients, like a week or two later, and they reported the same thing. So I went back and looked in my notes to see if I had done anything that caused this experience to happen, and then I saw it. It was as clear as day, and in these cases, I gave them one more set of eye movements and had them close their eyes. And without offering any suggestion or without leading them in any direction, they just closed their eyes, and this very natural experience would then just come to them. So then I thought, well, I wonder if I added this extra eye movement with my other patients, if they would have this experience too. And so when I started doing that, I found out that indeed nearly everybody I worked with then had the experience. And then I was very happy to find out it wasn't just me. It wasn't any special power I had or anything like that, because I then began to train some of my colleagues about the changes I made to standard EMDR and how I did this extra set of eye movement at the end and so on. And they reported the same success I was experiencing. So it worked rapidly. It was very reliable. And other mental health people, professionals, could do it as well and just as easily. It was actually kind of simple.
Yeah, and I know that actually we have several people on Forever Family Foundation's board that were trained by you. I know Dr. Mo Hanna.
Mo Hanna is an outstanding psychologist. She's also a professor of psychology.
Right.
And she is the director of IED research internationally. She's an outstanding person.
Yeah, absolutely. We love her. And I know, Dr. Parisetti is over in Europe is now, you know, working with this. So the first question I know that a lot of people are going to be asking if they haven't read the book is that, okay, I'm going to learn how to do this, and I'm going to induce myself. Yeah. So you want to address that?
Yeah. I wish it could be that easy. But in fact, as a matter of fact, I probably would have sold a million books by now if I could tell readers how to induce this experience on themselves. But as a psychologist, my first duty is to not cause harm. And EMDR is not a talk therapy. It's really a high-powered psychophysiological procedure. And even people who are well-trained in EMDR have difficulty doing it on themselves because their own emotions get in the way and so on. You know, I kind of compare EMDR to the more old-time therapy, whereas the old-time therapy is kind of like an old jalopy which you get around the track and breaking down from time to time. And when you use EMDR, it's like a race car that goes 240 miles an hour around the track. And to do that, you have to be a good driver. And the EMDR can be so intense that things can happen that if an untrained person might not know how to deal with it. And
right.
I wish it didn't have to be that way, but it is. I mean, if I wrote a book telling people how to do it on themselves and one person committed suicide as a result, I it wouldn't be worth it to me.
Yeah, well, absolutely.
So I only train people who already have the first weekend of EMDR training done. And when they're to that point, I'm ready to teach them in my induced after-death communication or IADC procedure.
Hmm. So you know, even way back when, I mean, you were somewhat progressive in the way you treated your patients, because I think when it came to grief and bereavement, I mean, you recognized that incorporating techniques with the patient where you encouraged engagement, you know, with the deceased as opposed to, like, separation
right.
has beneficial effects. I mean,
right.
do you see progress being made among your colleagues, you know, as we go, as time has gone on with people, professionals, mental health professionals?
I think so. I think the wheels are turning slowly. But, you know, the old ideas regarding grief go all the way back to Sigmund Freud. And, you know, his thing was is you're supposed to sever your connection with the deceased so you can then get on and live a happy life as opposed to dwelling on the person you lost. And that's an idea that kind of never went away. Although there was a beautiful book written by a number of authors, it was edited by Glass and somebody else, but I forget the author. But the name of the book is Continuing Bonds, and what it's a book, it's a number of research articles by people all over the world, and the research strongly indicates that people do better in grief when they maintain some kind of connection with the deceased, as opposed to trying to just completely sever their connection. And and then with all the research and all the reports coming out about near-death experiences, after-death communications, deathbed visions, you know, all of these people under a variety of circumstances are all reporting pretty much the same experience, which to me constitutes the strongest evidence for an afterlife, and I think that's the best hypothesis we have going, without a doubt. There's nothing else that explains it that well. Nevertheless, I tend not to engage in the more philosophical, spiritual debates because I see my job more as healing. And
right.
if I can heal somebody and if I can bring this experience to them, then those are the people that have the informed opinion about these experiences, and those are the people that should be asked the question, are these experiences spiritually real, and so on. You know, why ask me? I'm just a psychologist. What do I know? You know?
Yeah. I think you're right. We've always felt that what could be a more effective form of grief therapy than mm-hmm. you know, the belief that your loved one still survives. So I mean, it doesn't get
or I'll even go one step further.
Yeah.
Even more important than the belief that your loved one survives is the experience that your loved one survives.
Absolutely. Yeah. We're going to have to go to a break. When we come back, I wanted to ask you, because it's something that I hear a lot. People may confuse this technique and think it's some form of hypnosis, and then say,
right.
"Well, it's just the power of suggestion." So when
right.
we come back, I'd like to start
okay.
off with that. So we're going to go to a break.
Excellent question.
And we'll be back in a couple of minutes. Stay with us.
Hello, my name is Lauren Halpern, and I'm a Reiki master. I enjoy bringing peace and inspiration to people. I conduct healing circles with inspiration, meditation, and Reiki at different community developments, religious institutions, and many other locations. People react so wonderfully to my events. For more information, please contact me, Reiki Touch by Lauren at 954-464-0087. That's 954-464-0087, or email me at laurenhalpern@gmail.com. laurenhalpern@gmail.com.
Hello, my name's Piero Calvi Parisetti, MD. I invite you to discover my video course on Evidence for Life After Life, a professional counseling resource for the bereaved and the dying.
Transform the fear of death. Heal the pain of a loss by learning about life after life.
For more information and a free preview, visit www.drparisetti.com. That's drparisetti in one word.
The CAMLAC Center is putting birth and death back together again. Aimed at changing the way we look at death, the CAMLAC Center was founded in 2002 as a publishing company and teaching center. When we know that there is nothing but life, we realize that birth and death are events in time and space. Our grief can open us to other dimensions of reality and allow us to experience our loved ones who are no longer in the physical body. Our events and products are based on personal experiences of survival of consciousness after physical death and decades of research into how death has influenced the development of our consciousness. Visit www.camlac.com, that's K-A-M-L-A-K.com, for articles, videos, books, and more to help you cope with the loss of a loved one.
For years, people have been reporting communication from those no longer in our physical world. Historically, science and religion have taught us to ignore such messages. Yet, there is now substantial scientific evidence to the contrary. In response to this, the Forever Family Foundation has developed a sign registry to demonstrate the existence of this other dimension. On our website, people can register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to a specific loved one. Upon the registrant's passing, the stored information can be verified by the recipient of these signs. Participants will be taking part not only in a grand scientific experiment, but in providing the greatest gift of all, the knowledge that we survive our physical death. For more information, contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707, or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Or to register a sign, go directly to thesignregistry.com.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
If you are just tuning in, our guest tonight is Dr. Alan Botkin. Our sponsor is Reiki Touch by Lauren, and she could be reached at 954-464-0087. If you are a business interested in advertising on our show, please contact us via email at radio@foreverfamilyfoundation.org or call the office at 631-425-7707. Before we get back to our show, it's time for a few foundation updates. Did you know that you can financially support the work of Forever Family Foundation, a 100% not-for-profit organization, without sending us a single pretty penny? When shopping on the Internet, think of us before you go to Amazon.com and instead go to foreverfamilyfoundation.org and use the Amazon link to get to Amazon. Don't worry, there's a link on every page of our new website. If you add that one simple step to your shopping, a dollar percentage of everything that goes into your shopping cart will generate a donation from Amazon to us. And what if you don't shop on Amazon? Not a problem. There's another way to be certain that almost all your website shopping produces a donation to Forever Family Foundation without you having to send us anything. Visit iGive.com. Do it now. Sign up with iGive. It's free. Name Forever Family Foundation as the charity of your choice. And just like with Amazon, a portion of your spending results in a donation to Forever Family Foundation. Once you set it up, each time you shop on the Internet, iGive.com will automatically send us a donation when you shop in one of their more than 1,400 online stores that you're probably already shopping in, like Big Dogs, Cheap Tickets, Home Depot. And how about Urban Outfitters? And one last thing, you'll need a credit card to shop online. So if you don't already have one or need another, go to foreverfamilyfoundation.org and apply for the Visa credit card. Visa will make a donation to us for each card that's taken out, and each time the card is used, a portion of that charge is donated back to Forever Family Foundation. So please take a few moments when you shop to show us that you care. Our Holiday of the Earth raffle is up and ready for future winners to get those tickets. The link is available on our brand new website, and please be generous as these two raffles each year help us fund our very basic of programs, including the new website. In this raffle, you can win one or more one-hour phone readings with one of our certified mediums, Neil Zapowski, Renee Buck, Renata Santarelli, Lee Ashley, or Bobby Allison. It's only $5 a chance. And a secret tip for our listeners, as of this morning, only 24 people have entered this raffle. You do the math. Our Holidays Past in Pompton Lakes is set for March 22nd, and there are only two seats left as of this morning. This event is rescheduled from December and again from January due to two snowstorms of the 17 or so we've already had in the Northeast this year. Our annual grief retreat is set for the weekend of July 25th to 27th. We promise no snowstorms then. Back at the wonderful guest house in Chester, Connecticut, we've also added a day just for parents who have lost children. There are a limited number of rooms at the retreat, and they are already filling, so make your decision to attend soon. If you would like to save money, we can put you into a double or triple with others of the same gender who will be attending. Reservations can be made via the event page on our website at foreverfamilyfoundation.org, and the early bird special is in effect until May 1st, I believe. Back to you, Bob.
Okay, and we are speaking with Dr. Alan Botkin. The book is called Induced After-Death Communication, A New Therapy for Healing Grief and Trauma. Dr. Botkin's site is induceadc.com. And when we last left, I was about to pose the question to Dr. Botkin, something that I'm sure he's heard quite often. People, skeptic, might say, well, you know, it's the power of suggestion. These people are hypnotized, so they're having these, the suggestion that they're going to speak to their loved one, and the hypnosis makes it happen. So I take it that this doesn't have anything to do with hypnosis?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I would say it's the opposite of hypnosis.
Okay.
And so far, the brain studies that have been done on both EMDR and hypnosis indicate that that is, in fact, the case. When we are hypnotized, we are in a very relaxed and focused and highly suggestible state. And that state is generally associated with slower brainwave activity. However, during EMDR and any kind of eye movement variation of that, the brain waves do not slow. They generally are in the same region as waking consciousness. So that's the first thing from a more neuroscience point of view. Secondly, from a more clinical point of view, if I attempted to offer a suggestion to one of my patients, like saying something like, I'm going to give you another set of eye movement, and this time you're going to see your deceased father standing there talking to you. If I attempted to do that, it just wouldn't work. The patient needs to be wide open every time to anything that might happen. If they try to control it or make it happen, it just doesn't work. As a matter of fact, people who are atheists and don't believe in such things are actually slightly easier to induce than people who come in with strong beliefs about the afterlife. And that is, and the reason for that is people with strong beliefs generally have a hard time not putting their own expectations or their own suggestions into the experience.
So when
people just need to be wide open every day. As a matter of fact, when I worked at the VA hospital, nearly all of these guys had given up a belief in God and thought what I was about to give them in terms of this therapy, that they thought it sounded ridiculous. And they would say, like, Dr. Al, that's not going to work with me. I don't believe in that crap. Well, actually, they were the easiest of all to induce, because when I got to the point after clearing their sadness with the eye movement and then giving them this last set of eye movement without any suggestion, they were just open to this very natural experience.
So when the patients are in experiencing this after-death communication, which may be a vision, you know, of their deceased loved one, do they sometimes report communication, you know, telepathic communication?
Absolutely. These induced after-death communications come in a variety of forms. Sometimes they just see the deceased. And by the way, if they died old and young or old and sick, they always appear young and healthy. They can see the deceased. Oftentimes there is some kind of communication. And like you say, it seems to be more telepathic as opposed to detecting sound waves moving through the air, that kind of, you know, we call that verbal communication. But as a matter of fact, I worked with combat vets who had ADC experiences with Vietnamese people who died. And my patients would say, you know, I know this person wasn't speaking English or Vietnamese to me, but somehow telepathically the message he was giving me was extremely clear.
Which is consistent with other forms
of that.
Sometimes
there's a touch. There's often a touch, a hug. People oftentimes get hugs, and most often it's a combination of you know, tactile, visual, verbal, or you know, telepathic, that kind of thing. So it comes in different varieties.
Yeah. And how? What's a typical length in physical time of an IADC experience?
Well, it can vary. Oftentimes, it's only 5 to 15 to 20 seconds. But the thing is, you can then do the more of the eye movement and go back to the experience and do much more with it. Sometimes we have the patient continually bilaterally stimulate in some kind of way, either with headphones or with alternately touching their arms, and sometimes that helps extend the length of time that people are in that state. However, people also say, you know, gee, if I come in and I have a, you know, and I can communicate with my deceased daughter, I'm going to want to keep doing that over and over again. I'm not going to want to stop. And what's interesting is people who say that, what they get from the experience is so profound and it's so complete, they generally don't have that desire afterwards. You know, they say things that, well, you know, I got what I needed. You know,
yeah, I was going to ask you that. You know, whether patients come back and say, I got to go see Dr. Al and get my fix. You know,
very few of them do that. They get what they need the first time.
Yeah. I know. You've also, as I recall from the book, witnessed a shared IADC.
Yeah, and that's something that I and some of my colleagues want to get back to eventually and do more formal research on. But the first time this happened, it happened by mistake. I had a doctoral-level intern watching me do the procedure on one of my Vietnam vets, And for whatever reason, my observing intern closed his eyes and started giving himself eye movement, and somehow managed to completely tap into my patient's private experience. In other words, they shared the private experience of the ADC. And it was a very atypical ADC that involved kind of much different content than sort of the average ADC. So, you know, there was something, you know, really remarkable happened there. And as a matter of fact, I had a few colleagues, and one, actually two in particular, who I trained. And sometimes, or oftentimes, they're able to quickly give themselves eye movement and share in their patient's experience.
Mm. Well, it makes sense. You mean you've read Moody, and he's written about shared deathbed visions. You know, so it's
absolutely. Yeah. It's the same thing. Now, that's a real good argument for the objective validity of these experiences. Two people, you know, having the exact same private experience obviously lends some, it's hard to say those are two completely subjective experiences occurring. There's something objective going on, something real.
I remember when I first read your book when it came out originally in the mid-90s that, you know, I was reading about your stats, you know, and there was such a high percentage of people that had not only had these experiences, but had their profound sadness, you know, resolving, you know. And then when I first read that, I said, well, this guy's got to be nuts. You know? How could you have, especially a bereaved parent, you know, how could you suggest that their profound sadness could resolve? But as I read further, I realized that you were suggesting that, you know, where the profound sadness comes was from the utter feeling of a complete disconnection, and that if you now see the connection, then the periods of sadness are better tolerated. So is that a fair assessment of where you're coming from?
Yeah, and well, I think that's a very important essential component of this. However, I would even say, the people I work with and the people I train who also do this, and by the way, there are IADC therapists all over the world at this point in about 12 different countries. What was I going to say?
Well, I do know that you have a resource that people can go to find a trained therapist, and I know that most of the sessions involves a series, right, of three sessions.
Two 90-minute sessions. I'm thinking of my granddaughter today. So
yeah.
What most IADC therapists or all of them would say was, even if the chances of having an after-death communication experience after two sessions or at the end of the second session is about 75%. But even those people who don't experience the after-death communication, it's well into the 90% range that they leave feeling much better, a sense of peace, and with a lot of relief. And that just comes from the eye movement work itself. The eye movement work that we do in terms of processing that really deep, profound sadness is the first 90%, and the last 10% is the ADC. So it's all about getting that sadness processed and reduced and getting people to a state where they're feeling good. And once they get to that state, they are much more open to an ADC experience. There's something about the sadness that prevents the experience. And even people who report spontaneous ADCs will tell you that they didn't have a spontaneous ADC when they were feeling sad or wanting the experience or even thinking about their deceased loved one. They always kind of come out of the blue, you know, most often during sleep. But, you know, you can be getting up in the morning and putting your socks on or brushing your teeth, and boom, there's the ADC. So there's something about the sadness and the energy of sadness that prevents communication. And once we clear that sadness, people are ready.
Oh, That makes sense.
As long as you don't offer any suggestions.
Right.
Let this natural experience just happen. Just let it happen. Go wherever it takes you, I tell my people.
Exactly. And we have been talking with Dr. Alan Botkin. The book, Induced After-Death Communication, A New Therapy for Healing Grief and Trauma. I know that there's going to be a rewrite soon of this book, so go on the website, induceadc.com, where you can learn more about the book, about the rewrite of the book, and also a resource for trained professionals who can administer this procedure.
I know the address that does work is induced-adc.com.
Yeah, I went on both, and they both work. So
they both work. Okay, that's good.
Well, thank you again. Congratulations. We appreciate you joining us on this wonderful day for you and your family. And
thank you much, Bob and friends.
We hope to visit us again soon.
I hope so. Thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome. Take care.
We now ask our listeners to please join us in our Healing Energy Circle prayer. May the universe create a channel of healing energy from our participating listeners, sending that energy to those who are in need of recovery of the physical body, spirit, and mind, as we visualize the healing light upon Patty Potter, Chip Reichenthal, Michael Tim, Trueb, Scott Magnus, Gina DiDonato, Rita Dwyer, Tracy Lee Nash, Philip McKee, Joel Lerman, Jean Lash, Francis Mastracco, Jim Donahue, Barbara Russell, Vicki Steffi, Wendy Lippo, Mark Farron, Eileen Lafata, Rita Springer, David Haith, Barbara Petillo, Leanne Ashley, David Mello, Phyllis Alexander, Betty Alexander, Ann Hutchinson, John Cahali, Henry Stark, Johnny Jackson, Kimberly Saavedra, Rachel S., Jeanette Davies, Andy O'Brien, Tanya Cash, Marianne Pierzga, Flora Prisco, Stanley Mullen, Julie B., and Glenna Irwin. Now let us as one consciousness give our energy of loving thought by praying like this: to love one another, to treat others as we would like to be treated, to forgive others and return love for hate, kindness for anger, to spread this feeling to everyone, to our fellow man, as well as the earth and its environment. And now it's time to say,
our loved ones are only a heartbeat away.
And science is going to prove it.
Good night, everyone.